Today's edition of the Capital Daily Podcast is brought to you by us, Capital Daily. With a committed audience of over 41,000 people, get connected with some of the smartest, hippest people on the West Coast. For more details, visit capitaldaily.ca. The Capital Daily newsletter has an exciting new look. Be sure to subscribe to see our fancy new format, which makes it easier than ever to never miss what's happening in Victoria, Vancouver Island, and beyond. To subscribe, simply head to capitaldaily.ca. Hi, I'm Ben Waterworth, and welcome to the Capital Daily Podcast for Friday, November 27th, 2020. Today on the podcast...
Stay close to why you're playing music, because it's an entity that needs to be breathed and lived and eaten and all that stuff, and not necessarily just supported through zeros and ones on the computer.
We chat with one of BC's favourite blues artists, Sean Hall, about his latest supergroup project and what drew him to moving to Vancouver Island. Hall is best known as one half of the BC blues duo Harpoonus and the Axe Murderer. Together with Matthew Rogers, the pair carved out quite a significant career since 2006, winning countless awards and having their music featured on major television shows such as CSI, Blue Bloods, and The Good Wife. Sean has recently taken on a new musical project and formed a supergroup called Satellite and the Harpoonist, which features a variety of other artists from different musical acts, including the Deep Dark Woods, the Boom Booms, and King Missile. The supergroup recently released their debut EP, Satellite Man, and have since taken the opportunity to hit the road with their music, including bringing their tour right here to the island. And to talk more about the group, his music, their EP, and his connection right here to the island, it's a pleasure to chat with Sean Hall on the Capital Daily Podcast today. Sean, mate, thanks very much for joining me today.
Thanks, Ben. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, very well. How about yourself in this very interesting times we're living in right now? Lockdown 2.0, I guess we can call it, right?
Lockdown 2.0. My kids asked me this morning as I was dropping into school, I said, you know, I gotta get you guys out here and in 10 minutes, otherwise I'm going to miss this interview. And they said, well, wait a minute, doesn't the person that's interviewing you also have kids to drop off? And I went, I don't know, I'd probably have to ask you. Ben, did you drop off your kids this morning?
No, I did not. Unfortunately, I have no children, at least that I don't know of, at least Sean. So I didn't have to go through that this morning, thankfully.
Well, as we hit lockdown 2.0, it shall be pretty interesting just to see, keep an eye on the schools to see how long they stay open and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's a fairly frustrating time to try to navigate the music business online. I'd say there's a lot of great innovations going on and it's a great time for collaborations, but it's a really difficult terrain to, you know, to hit up and to put out a record and try to go through what you normally would. It's a Zoom world.
Yes, very much so. And it must make it an even more interesting time then to essentially form a supergroup too, Sean. I mean, out of all the times to do it, as you're saying, in a Zoom world, usually you'd probably all come together over some beers, form a project and get in the recording studio. But now it's, I guess, get together in your pajamas after dropping the kids off from school and going on a Zoom instead.
Yeah, okay, come on. There were beers.
Yes, well, that's good.
I met all of the musicians that were involved in the project. I'd met them at different points while being on the road, and I've with the Harpoonist, the Axe Murder, throughout the last many years. So I'd perform with, like, you know, Jeff Hillhurst is the organ and piano player, and he lives in Banff, and he's played with the band when we've done shows in Alberta, and I've known him through the Deep Dark Woods, who we've been friends with for years, and so that's, like, you know, that's one member that, like, you know, we've wanted to do lots of different stuff throughout the years. We're just trying to figure out when to do it, but now he's in the Rockies, so wow. I've got a, you know, he's two tanks of gas away from being able to meet up with me.
That's not too bad. That's better than three easily. So that works kind of that way. I'm just happy that a supergroup is still a thing. I didn't realize that supergroups still existed, Sean. So I'm just happy that this concept isn't dead and buried and that we're still able to put something together and see a supergroup out there.
That's pretty cool. I didn't even think it was a supergroup. I just thought, like, let's put together people that really love playing live music. That's the irony, is that I put together, I had known all of these people. So the cast of characters is myself on vocals and a really weird synthy harmonica. So you can't even tell it's harmonica. Jeff Hillhurst on organ, Hammond organ specifically, synth and piano. Bradford Reed on pensolina and drums. And pensolina is like a slide, an open slide, open tune slide instrument of slide guitar and slide bass, and he plays drums at the same time.
Wow.
And I met him as well, oddly enough, at the Banff Center while he was putting together his own personal project called Anthems of the Void. And he is a phenomenal a musician, experimental musician from Brooklyn. And then the third or the fourth member is Theo Vincent from a group called the Boom Booms. And I've known the Boom Booms for years, and we had the Boom Booms playing with us, or we had Theo play percussion and congas and guira and, like, you know, shakers and stuff like that with the Harpoonist the Axe Murder for a couple shows. And then I just asked him if he'd come on board and be the ringleader. So.
And is that generally how all that works? Sort of you approach these guys that you've worked with or seen over the years and kind of bite the bullet and go, hey, let's come together and form a project and sort of source out what their thoughts are on that?
Yeah, I mean, I knew that in order to do something pretty outside the box and from what I was doing with Matt, with the Harpoonist the Axe Murder, that it had to be really, really oddball experimental. Because Harpax isn't a traditional band anyway. We're both sitting and playing a variety of instruments, just the two of us, and doing double duty in an unorthodox approach to, you know, blues and soul and stuff. So these guys, what I did was I had to get a chunk of time. I think it was like 3 or 4 days where everyone's schedules lined up. And then I rented a house in Vancouver for, like, you know, 5 days and booked recording time and then booked a film crew. I went completely old school, you know, and did everything out of pocket and just with the hopes. This was last January, January 21st, 22nd, 23rd, I think in and around then. And I did it with the hopes that we could use it as like a demo tape so that we could be getting festival gigs and all that kind of stuff. So it was like a grown, you know, it wasn't meant to be this project with videos and an EP and all that stuff. And it was supposed to, like, you know, it was supposed to be almost like a really fancy demo tape. And then it was, you know, sadly it was a month and a half before everything shut down. But at the same rate, I was also very happy to have done it because it was, you know, the grayest, rainiest. I mean, it was like Blade Runner style rain outside. It was completely dismal. And we had one rehearsal space for, you know, one afternoon in the freeze. There wasn't even a heater in the rehearsal space. I introduced the fellas to each other. They had 1 hour to get acquainted, and then we went into the rehearsal space. And the very next day, we were in the recording studio.
Wow, that quick! Incredible.
That quick, yeah.
And that must be a good feeling, because I can imagine when you've got a bunch of guys coming together from a bunch of different musical acts that there's initially maybe not something that you all come together on the same page. You work out what you're trying to do and then come together to record that music. But it sounds like that was a seamless transition. There mustn't have been any sort of issues when you first meet and go, what are we going to do here, guys?
No, there was personality. There were nerves coming out of every single pore of everyone's body. Because, you know, they trusted me. I said, look, the songs are good. I know the songs are great. I'd written them with a friend of mine, Jonas Spring. And I'd been looking for, like, a vessel to a body, a group of people that could interpret these and, you know, build a new life out of the songs. And I'd had them sitting around for like a few years. So they trusted that the songs were good. But aside from that, I wasn't that much of a control freak. I wanted to see what happened. What happens when someone from Banff and someone from Vancouver and someone from Brooklyn meet in a rehearsal studio with no heat, you know, in the middle of winter, and we have one day to get all the songs together. And does everything just sort of fall into place? And it eventually did, but it was kind of freaky because there's a lot of different approaches. The Brooklyn approach and the Vancouver approach are very different to making music in studios.
Yeah, I can imagine. Completely different ends of the spectrum there, no doubt.
Completely different ends. And put a film crew in there as well. And you've got a bit of a pressure cooker, you know, but it was fantastic. I mean, it was a really, really fun. It was a fun voyage to be on because I stood back while a lot of it happened. And I watched, you know, as all these personalities unfolded, and I didn't want to control freak the crap out of it, because that wouldn't have meant, you know, that wasn't the kind of experience. That's not the kind of person that I am.
I have to ask, with any band coming together like this or projects coming together, the name Satellite and the Harpoonist, how long did it take to come up with that? And whose idea was it to have that as the name?
There'd be Natasha Dupree's influence. She's a Vancouver, a legendary Canadian TV and film music supervisor, like sync person. And she was in a bar. We were in this bar two or three nights in a row called Uncle Abe's. And that's on Main Street in Vancouver. And we'd go there after we were recording all day and unwind and have some beers at night. And she sat down and she said, well, what's the name of the project? And we went, oh God, like we hadn't even got that far. Said, well, it's just going to be, you know, it'll be the Harpoonist and, you know, such and such. And then she said, well, you need something like you need something that's got to, you know, represent it. And then maybe it should be the band and the Harpoonist. And I was like, oh yeah, that's great. That'll be fantastic. So we talked about, think of it more like it's a satellite project, and it was a satellite project to my other band at the time, Harpoonist and the Axe Murderer. And it ended up being like, I don't know how we stumbled upon satellite. I think we were talking about moons and planetary things. And we just thought that, well, maybe I could be the Harpoonist, like the Petit Prince, and they're the planet.
Wow.
And I'm just the little guy on the planet. So it's Satellite and the Harpoonist.
I can always imagine that's the funnest part of any musical project that anyone's involved in, is coming up with a name of the band. Because sure, there's got to be a lot of effort put into it, because you want that to be screamed out at the Grammys or something like that one day. But just the names, I can imagine you've come up throughout your career, Sean, for a variety of projects. You've probably got a notebook somewhere with just some outlandish band names that are begging to be used.
Oh yeah, I've got some. And every once in a while I check out domains to see if they're free, and I just buy them for $1.
May as well invest in it. You never know.
I've got a couple good. I've got a good recently with me and my partner at home. We came up with a band name for the family. We're like, let's call ourselves Solar System Sister.
Nice.
And then we're like, I bet you that's not taken. Yeah. You know what? Not everything is taken.
Well, good. All right. Well, lobby now.
But shuck. Yeah, I know. But there's a lot out there that is, you know. So I know. Yeah.
Very true. We'll pretend that didn't happen. The EP, of course, has been out now for a couple of months. So all of this project coming together on those wintry days in January led to an EP. What was it like putting that together in these COVID times? And how have you found the reaction to it in the couple of months it's been out?
The process of putting it together was rather lengthy, because what we did was we wanted it to represent well on film and as an EP. And it's a difficult thing, because usually one has to sacrifice for the other. And since the film wasn't being used to, like, you know, book us shows and get us all these, you know, gigs that we thought that we were going to be busy doing and performing and out there working, we found a balance between the film and between the recording, which, you know, we ended up doing it to tape, and we did it, which is very common. But what's not as common is we didn't use a click, and we didn't grid anything up. So it meant what you saw was what you got, and there was no overdub of any sort, and you weren't you weren't taking the best takes between different takes because everything was just feel. And that was incredibly freeing. I think that's the biggest thing that I learned from that project is you can actually exist performing without a click track. People do it all the time doing shows, and you don't need a click track to determine, you know, whether your groove is on. You just need to cohesively breathe together as a group, right? And I think that's the biggest thing when putting the project together was that it breathes and we all breathe together and it's not locked. It's not a slave to the click. So it meant that the project breathed more than other records that I've worked on.
And it must make it, as a musician too, that raw element from when you first got involved in music, when you first started creating music before you even thought of having a click track, that it kind of takes you all back to that moment when it's literally all about the music at that point.
Yes. Yes. And there's something that, you just need to trust your intuition and whatnot. And you can tell, everyone can tell when something starts speeding up or you feel these, and it's not a bad thing for music to speed up. It happens orchestrally all the time. People try to automate it in Pro Tools a lot of times. And, and it's a lot easier if you can just be free with it when you're tracking it. So from the get-go and breathe and speed up and slow down together as a group. But I think people have really, from what I've heard, people have really liked how experimental and how kind of deep we went with a lot of the grooves. And because it was just a really oddball, like to have a Hammond organ sitting in and amongst an instrument that is one of its kind, right? The pencilina, there's only one pencilina on the planet. No one else would be crazy enough to invent that instrument. There was a really neat, it was a very unique blend of instrumentation and that lended itself to like these big wide open, spaces and these really, really deep grooves, so that was fun to explore.
And I can also imagine, given that you're all from different projects and all your fans in your respective projects would know you for your music, when you all sort of come together in that aspect, you've got fans from all these projects wanting to tune in and listen. So you would have, I guess, different expectations from people out there who have expectations already from your original projects and what it sounds like in that, which must bring its own unique feedback, essentially, from your music in this project.
Yes. Yeah. I think that what Bradford said, the pencilina player, he said it was the first music that he's made. His friends, he's 50 years old, and his friend said it's the first music they've heard him made in his life that they enjoy.
Wow.
<'Cause he's, laughs> his friends are very honest. New Yorkers are so honest, right? And he's done wildly experimental stuff. And he was also one of the founding members of the Blue Man Group.
Mm.
On Broadway and doing a lot of, he's an improvisational player. So this is pop. This is as poppy as it gets for him, and then on the other side of things, like for Jeff, the Deep Dark Woods are much more, their writing might be more based in, Grateful Dead songbook style writing, a bit more wide open. They represent the prairie landscape fairly well from which they're all from in the writing. And this one is like, I know that Jeff is just a really, really incredibly deep, unorthodox organ player. And I wanted to have a project where he can just completely, follow his heart's content and go right off the page. So I think that this is just the beginning. I wish we had, a week in the studio instead of 3 days, but we got what we got.
You talked before about how possibly this project coming together was something to go to a couple of festivals and tour, and obviously given the times we're in right now, it's a little bit tricky. Festivals aren't happening, touring isn't happening like it used to, but you're still able to bring some of the music on the road, including out here to the island, to Campbell River, to perform some of the songs in a unique setting, a unique environment. Tell our listeners a little bit about how this show is going to work when you bring it here to the island.
So the show that's been put on by the Tidemark Theater, these guys invested right out of the gates, I think back in March, they decided that this is, you know, probably going to be the norm for a while. And so they invested in a lot of gear, and they ended up getting, I think they've got four or five cameras. They have projection abilities where they can project both on the screen, on the stage. They have a switcher. They have all of that stuff. So whether there's an audience or there isn't physically in person, they can broadcast at a very high quality on a multi-camera shoot that would look probably much like a TV or a theatrical production that's filmed. And so I'm doing a show there this Saturday in Campbell River. However, it was the only audience show that I was going to play this year, since March, I should say. And there's no audience anymore. So I'm doing it with wonderful musician that's based out of Courtney Comox named Doug Cox. I've known him for a number of years, and he's going to play Lap Steel, and he'll play you know, probably Weisenborn and probably, you know, mandolin and really cool stuff like that.
Is it a place you get to often, the island? Is it somewhere you've toured frequently in the
I
past?
live on the island,
You live
man.
on the
And
island. How did I not
yeah,
know
man,
this? What's going on?
that's all right. No,
Wow.
because well, the protocol is now this is you need to isolate for 2 weeks if you're coming over to the island.
Yeah.
So I can't. So I don't have. Theo was going to come over and play with me, but he can't come over and play.
Right.
So, because otherwise he'd have to isolate for 2 weeks. Yeah, I'm over on the island. Otherwise, I wouldn't be able to do this gig at all.
Wow. So when you moved to the island, what drew you to moving over here?
Family. You know, is a well, you know what? I think I lived I put in my time in Vancouver. I lived in Vancouver from 2001 until 2011-ish. And I think that, you know, I just put in, you know, 10 or 11 years there, and it was a difficult city to really land, and get a great base of friends because it's fairly transient. And or there's just people from all over the world that want to live there, so that it's difficult to really find a community. But I had a fantastic one for 11 years, and by the time I moved over to the island 8 years ago, eight and a
Wow.
half, 9 years ago, it was time to get an affordable place to live. And so I moved over here
Rest is
and got a
history.
place.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the rest is history. And I'm like, I need to put some musical roots down someplace else. So,
And how do you find the musical scene coming over here to the island? Is it something you were expecting, a little bit different? Kind of, how do you find it?
People are. I find it depends on where you are on the island, but it can be fairly insular. There's in my town, people kind of hide out a lot. So in Nanaimo, people are. There's a lot of different scenes, but they're all sort of, you know, not quite as visible, except for the blues scene. The blues scene is always fairly visible. I'm familiar with, you know, there's a lot of great musicians up in Cumberland. That's a great nest of pickers and string players up in Cumberland, and over in that part in Courtney as well. They're, you know, fantastic players. And Salt Spring, I'm not so familiar with, although I know that, you know, a lot of rock and rollers, you know, Randy Bachman used to live there, and you know, Grapes of Wrath, one of the members from Grapes of Wrath lives there, and there's a lot of rock and rollers that move there, and have, you know, hide out there. I know Raffy lives in Salt Spring, and so there's a lot of different pockets. It's an interesting place because you need to go and seek them out, because people don't come to islands to be, they come to islands to kind of hide out, and to be, you know, left to their own, you know, curiosities and whatnot. And some people just like isolating, so you have to dig them out.
When you were younger and decided to follow music as a career, Sean, did you ever imagine it would take you on the journey it had? And what was it that kind of led you into pursuing music as a career?
Oh boy. I think, I don't know if I wanted to pursue it as a career, but I think I always, you know, I think a lot of people, I'm very similar to so many musicians where you're 15 and you want to, and you're in a band, or you're 15 and you want that band to mean something, and you want to mean something to your community and your friends and whatnot. And I don't know if you ever really outgrow that. And you just want to play in a, you know, in a good rock and roll bar. you know, 100 people, 50 people, 200 people, doesn't matter. And you want that to mean something to your community, and you want to be part of that greater community. And I think that's the, that's been in me my entire life, where, you know, I always wanted to be in that, you know, that greasy, you know, blues can that's packed at, you know, 2 or 3 in the morning. And I've wanted to embody that spirit. And because I know that people take, I know being a music fan, that people just take that home and they take it and it spreads amongst their community. And there's just so much that you can build, you know, with that vibe from all the relationships formed in those kind of spaces, and which we simply just aren't, we're not living right now during this COVID, you know? But I think, did I think it would take me to Australia? No. Did I think it would take me to, you know, a lot of the places I've been? I played in, you know, a bar that was designed by David Lynch.
Wow.
In Paris. In Paris, and it had all these, it was like a private music club for, you know, for the elite.
Wow.
In Paris. And that was like, you know, certainly incredible, incredible and surreal. And there's been, you know, opportunities like that in life that have, you know, that are worth it for the experience, not for the actual quote unquote career or dollars earned, you know?
I have to ask, Sean, where in Australia did you end up going?
We went to Brisbane. We went to Mullumbimby. I've played...
The home of Iggy Azalea.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah.
The home of Iggy Azalea.
There you go.
Wow. I liked Mullum. I thought Mullumbimby was pretty awesome.
Great.
I thought Sydney... For the size of the town, we went there at the wrong time, and we had probably one of the quietest shows for 15 or 25 people.
Really? Wow.
And all toured. We went to Queenscliff. That was a gas. Queenscliff, yep. Music Festival was probably, that and Mullumbimby were my two favorite experiences.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Sydney is a great city. I'm from Tasmania, so, you know, I'm not quite from the big smoke, but I'm much more of a Melbourne man. I always think Sydney gets all the limelight, but to me, Melbourne's the much better city. So,
yeah, Melbourne was great. Melbourne had a lot of fantastic, you know, cocktail bars, and it's way ahead of the curve in terms of fusion cuisine.
Mm-hmm.
Melbourne was just like, yeah, what a fantastic place. But I quite, my favorite place was easily Mullum. I like the smaller towns. I'm not a, the big cities are like, they can tend to be a fair, you know, let down, I'd say, unless you're, because there's just so much competition, so much stuff going on. I like going to places where they're appreciative of the arts a lot more. And where they're very thankful that you went there.
Well, on that notion of small towns, I guess now living on the island, living in Nanaimo, and from where you started coming from your beginning of your music career to how, say, you see people today starting off in your music career, obviously lots has changed. I mean, is it something you like to give advice to up-and-coming musicians, or how can you possibly look at from where you started to how people are starting now? Because obviously things like the internet and how music is distributed was there when you started, but it's a lot different level to it is now. So is there comparisons that you can go from when you started to when people are starting today, particularly from those small markets?
This very particular, you know, pinpoint in time is very difficult to assess, because I can see there's a lot of smoke and mirrors in the digital age. And I think there's a lot of the popularity of likes and streams and views is seeming to falsely determine one's value in the musical world. And I think that is, I mean, I don't think it's accurate of what your worth is as an artist and what your imprint can be as an artist. And I think that during this very particular moment, you have older, you know, touring musicians like myself, where I've been, you know, I'm 45, I've been doing it for quite a while, where we have gone from being, you know, where I like face value, I like, you know, that where your currency is right there in front of you on stage or in person, And I like that interaction and your performance and whatnot and your relation with the crowd and that rapport that you can build. And I love that in person. I don't believe that. Therefore, when you switch over to a time where you're off the road, all of your worth is suddenly in streams on a platform like Spotify. How on earth that happened it's interesting to see which platforms take off. But I feel that that's become incredibly unhealthy. So I would think, like, if I had any advice, I would say, think beyond the likes and the streams, because it can lead to a sense of a lack of self-worth, a lack of, you know, value for you creatively, and keep it local. Keep all of your connections a lot closer, and stop trying to be, you know, and I'd say that for myself as well during this COVID time, where, you know, I've spent the majority of my career online trying to build different projects on different platforms, and YouTube and Apple and Spotify, and doing, you know, Zooms and all that kind of stuff. And like, you really need to get back to stay close to why you're playing music. And if you're feeling uncomfortable and unhealthy and sad and depressed, unplug and write and do things that connect you with the reason why you love the spirit of music, because it's an entity that needs to be breathed and lived and eaten and all that stuff, and not necessarily just supported through zeros and ones on the computer.
And do you feel that with this current situation we're in at the moment, that will change that even more so moving forward, because we might go more digital? Or do you kind of see it the opposite? People are so sick of being confined to their homes, they're desperate for live music, so maybe we're going to go back to a lot more of what you're talking about there, and it's more so about the music and people just want to see more of that.
I think it depends on the age group, right? I mean, if you're growing up, if you're coming of age, and coming of age, I mean, like, I don't know, if you're in your early or mid 20s or just in your 20s and you're making music, and this was going to be your breakout summer for your band, for your solo project, and it didn't end up becoming so, it could be a fork in the road for a lot of folks between whether they would end up becoming quote unquote online artists and making music and collaborating via, you know, all these different online platforms and making music that way versus the old, you know, the older, more traditional style of, you know, that needs to be in a room vibrating with other human beings and molecules making music together and all that. And I think there will be almost like two different styles of artists that come out of this. And I'm not saying, you know, one will be better than the other, but I feel like I really feel for people that were really hoping to have their breakout last year and they didn't get it. And maybe they're thinking about going into accounting, or, you know what I mean, Ben?
Yeah.
Like there could be if I was, you know, 24, 25, and this was going to be it. And I had 8 different festivals lined up this summer, and I had all my merch and I had all everything
ready to go, you
know,
yeah,
ready to go. Yeah. And then instead I was, you know, at home, and then I felt like, you know, I felt like the connectivity online felt flat in me, then maybe I might end up doing something else. Maybe I'd get into, you know, landscaping, or maybe I'd get into, you know, anything else. I'm not saying I'd get into landscape.
I'm just picturing a whole bunch of, I don't know why, long-haired metal rockers, you know, paving roads and, you know, dealing with numbers in books all of a sudden because they couldn't go to their shows. I mean, good for them. I think that would be great. But I don't know if I'd ever expect that, to go and get my books checked and accounting done, and here's a person that looks like that. But hey, sure, why not?
But you'll see. There's a lot of people I can see across the landscape, and I wouldn't name names, but I can see a lot of folks that have families that have been lifelong touring musicians, and they don't want to play the game, the online game. They don't want to. They drive to someone's town, they get up, they pull their gear out on stage, and they play shows, and they don't want to play the online game. And why should they? Now, for those folks that have earned a fantastic living, I can see a lot of those folks sort of like disappearing a little bit and taking time off. And I really hope that they're able to make it back if that's something they want to do, you know?
Well, we're going to see hopefully soon how that all plays out. We've been saying that for a few months now, Sean, but it will come about, no doubt, one day. But right now, we don't have to wait one day if you want to listen to Satellite and the Harpooner's debut EP. It's called Satellite Man. It is available right now. And Sean, I've had a lot of fun chatting with you today, learning a lot about this, and we're going to keep an eye on this project moving forward, and of course, with everything else that you've got going on in the future. But it's a pleasure to chat with you today on the Capital Daily Podcast.
Ben, it was great chatting with you too, Ben. I appreciate you taking the time.
Coming up, all the day's news, plus we hear some more music from Satellite and the Harpoonist next. Get connected to over 41,000 subscribers each day with one of the smartest, largest, and most engaged news audiences on the West Coast, all while supporting Vancouver Island's most dynamic source for in-depth news and analysis. Visit capitaldaily.ca for more details. To the day's news now, and Raincoast and the Pender Island Conservancy Association want to buy and protect an ecologically valuable piece of North Pender Island. The 13-acre plot is home to 35 species of birds and a threatened forest type, as well as a wetland that's critical to locals' drinking water supply. The groups have 6 months to raise $395,000 to buy the land from its Victoria owners. The land will likely otherwise end up being converted for human use, as more than 20% of the island already has been. And you can read more about this story right now at capitaldaily.ca. More than 5 people per day are dying from overdoses in BC, an October report shows. There were 162 overdose deaths in BC in the month of October, according to the Coroner's Service. That number more than doubled October 2019's death toll and included 27 Islanders and 13 Victorians. October was the 8th month in a row with the death toll above 100 and the 5th month this year with more than 160 deaths. This year is on pace for a BC all-time high of more than 1,650 drug toxicity deaths after recording 1,386 so far. Victoria has already reached a record high of 115 and the island is at a near record of 238. Not only has the pandemic exacerbated the overdose crisis by making it more difficult for people to access supports, but post-mortem toxicology testing also shows that the number of cases with extreme fentanyl concentrations has been increasing since April. And the Hudson's Bay Company is going to court seeking a refund on rent paid since April to its Bay Centre location in downtown Victoria. Bay Centre owner TBC Nominee Inc. is just one of numerous mall landlords that HBC is currently in disputes with. The Toronto Star reported the company hasn't paid rent to 8 companies in Ontario, Quebec, BC and Florida. On Monday, a Quebec judge ordered back rent paid to 3 companies. In ongoing suits, HBC is blaming mall landlords for its major losses, alleging they are breaking lease obligations by not providing sufficiently safe and high-caliber shopping centres. In each month of the pandemic, HBC's Bay Centre sales have been down at least 40% for the same month in 2019. The Times columnist reported that in April 2020, the location earned only $3,267 compared to $2.6 million in April 2019. The previously publicly traded HBC was taken private in March, 2 weeks before lockdowns began, and at that time touted its focus on unlocking the value of real estate holdings. And before we go today, I thought I'd enjoy a week with a bit of music as we hear some more from Satellite and the Harpoonist and their song, Satellite Man. Check it out.
Television's all I see. Frequencies that fill my dreams. I've been running all night long. Now my double chin chin smoking satellite bomb. I'm stepping with the biggest stomach.
Oh, always a great way to end your week with some great music in your head. And I should have mentioned earlier that if you do want to catch Sean's show tomorrow night, that he, of course, is performing in Campbell River, you can head to tidemarktheatre.com and buy a ticket to see the streaming show. Sounds like a perfect Saturday night in, if you ask me. And that's it today for the Capital Daily Podcast for Friday, November 27th, 2020, as well as the week. Tune in on Monday as we get a little bit prehistoric as I chat with Carly Burbank, one of the co-founders of the hidden Victorian gem that is Dino Lab. If you love dinosaurs like me, you won't want to miss it. Such a fun chat. That's Monday on the Capital Daily Podcast. My name is Ben Waterworth, and as they say in Australia, tracky ducks are comfy. Thanks for tuning in. Have a safe and enjoyable weekend, and I will speak to you on Monday. Today's edition of the Capital Daily Podcast is brought to you by us, Capital Daily. With a committed audience of over 41,000 people, get connected with some of the smartest, hippest people on the West Coast. For more details, visit capitaldaily.ca. The Capital Daily newsletter has an exciting new look. Be sure to subscribe to see our fancy new format, which makes it easier than ever to never miss what's happening in Victoria, Vancouver Island, and beyond. To subscribe, simply head to capitaldaily.ca.